Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. I hope you're enjoying the holiday season and not letting the burdens and obligations weigh you down. Thank you for taking a break from all I'm sure you have to do and to be with us tonight during our very popular Four Mothers and Wayshower series. I'm Karen Tate, your host, and that music I hope you enjoy tonight is a tease from a group called Zingaya, and the song was Nomad's Land. So whether you're washing the dishes or cooking dinner or wrapping presents or you're able to sit down with a cup of tea in your Snuggie, this next hour is my gift to you. This is Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks just might save the world. Well, as we wait for our guest tonight, Rhianne Eisler, to call into the show, we're going to dive right into the segment that has become rather popular with listeners called What's the Buzz? When I discuss the bees buzzing round in my bonnet, they're usually related to what's happening out there in the world, whether it be about spirituality, goddess advocates, or issues related to women, girls, and ideals of the sacred feminine. And we have a few different bees buzzing around this week, and the first one is about New York Protestant churches apologizing to Native Americans for decimating their culture. I thought that was rather interesting. In USA Today was where this article appeared, and it goes like this. It's short. 400 years after their spiritual ancestors took part in the decimation and dislocation of Native Americans in New York, one of the nation's first Protestant churches held a healing ceremony to apologize. Quote, we consumed your resources, dehumanized your people, and disregarded your culture, along with your dreams, hopes, and great love of this land, unquote. The person who said that was the representative from Collegiate Church, and they went on to say, with pain, we, the Collegiate Church, remember our part in these events. The Friday ceremony took place on Native American Heritage Day in Lower Manhattan, where in 1628 Dutch colonizers built the first Collegiate Church, then known as the Reformed Protestant Dutch Church, at Fort Amsterdam. The Dutch West Indies Company treated Native Americans as a resource, Collegiate said in a statement, and we were in the conscience of this company. Collegiate now includes four churches in New York, including Marble Collegiate Church, where the late Reverend Norman Vincent Peale preached from 1932 to 1984. Ron Holloway, who attended the ceremony as a representative of Native American people, said the Native populations were suppressed by a political and religious will of which they could never begin to conceive. But he said he and other Native Americans wholeheartedly accept this apology. So after 400 years, when someone says, I'm sorry, you say, really? Holloway told the AP before the ritual, there was some sort of uneasiness, but then you've got to accept someone's sincere apology. They said, we did it, we ran you off, we killed you, and now we're sorry. Interesting article. Next up is the Pope is writing a letter to Irish Catholics about child sex abuse scandals in Ireland. Pope Benedict is deeply disturbed by a child sex abuse scandal in Ireland and has written a letter to Catholics there on the church's response to a report that found the church shielded more than 100 child-abusing priests from the law. Benedict met at the Vatican with senior Irish clergy to discuss a possible response to the devastating report issued last month. A Vatican statement released after the 90-minute talk said the Pope studied the report carefully and expressed his profound regret. He was deeply disturbed and distressed by its contents. The Holy Father shares the outrage, betrayal, and shame felt by so many of the faithful in Ireland. Attending the talks at the Vatican were Irish Cardinal Sean Brady, Dublin Archbishop Diarmuid Martin, and the Vatican's representative to Ireland. One of the folks there said the Holy Father invited the Catholic world to pray for the victims, the survivors of child sexual abuse, and he said that the Holy See will be following very closely to discover how this tragedy took place. The report found that church leaders in Dublin Archdiocese failed to inform authorities about sexual abuse by priests, while police failed to pursue allegations under the belief that church figures were above the law. The damning revelation led to private debates among Catholic bishops over whether any of their number should resign. Martin said the church had introduced huge measures regarding child protection over the last years, and resignations were not the most important response to the scandal. It isn't just the question of heads rolling. I've said very clearly people assume their own responsibility, and it's good to see that that has begun with people doing it actually in public. That's quite a new thing in the church in Ireland. So next bee buzzing round in my bonnet is it's about something positive. It's about new online social activism, and it's called by a strange name. It sounds like the Watusi or something. It's actually called Swadeshi. And what it actually is e-activism or online social activism. And I learned about this from Lee Schneider. He's the founder of DocuCinema, and he has an interesting blog. And he talks about how, like never before, on the Internet, if people want to get involved, if they want to try to make the world a better place, there are lots of opportunities. For instance, you can go to changemakers.com and learn about inspiring people who are reimagining activism on the web. Then there's also another group called Charity Focus, where you volunteer your skills to help nonprofits. And if you run a nonprofit, it's a great way to find volunteers. There's also Be the Change Incorporated, which wants to inspire and promote the idea of social service. There's Good Magazine. It has an online presence that's dedicated to social action. And let's not forget MoveOn.org. These are just a few examples of the many different e-activism sites, or Swasadiji, that you can find on the Internet. Now, I have a little bit more of What the Buzz, but I'm going to take a break right now. And it seems like Rhianne is having difficulty, for some reason, getting connected to our switchboard. So I'm going to let you listen to some beautiful music from Lane Redmond. You know, she's that awesome percussionist. And she very kindly gave us some of her music to use on the show. And I don't often get to play her whole song. So I am going to take a five-minute break here, but I'll come back sooner if Rhianne and I get this technical glitch worked out. But sit back and relax and listen to Lane Redmond's Invoking Aphrodite. And I will be back one way or another, with or without Rhianne, within about 5 minutes. So please enjoy Lane Redmond, Invoking Aphrodite.
Smoking with incense. Cold water sings through the fruited trees. Everything is shaded under the bower of roses. And from the shimmering radiance of leaves, a an enchanted sleep drops down. Here is a meadow of spring flowers where horses graze, and a soft wind gently breathes. Come, Aphrodite, pour your nectar into our golden cup. In grace, make the libation. Bring your melissas to life.
Lebro me grida se piton de navon agnon. O patikarie men alsos malian. O mi vene timiamen i libanoto.
She's getting ready to be connected on the line now, so I thank listeners for their patience. Rhiann, are you there?
I am on the line. I'm here.
Welcome
I'm here.
To the show. Welcome to the show. I'm
it's
so glad.
It's my pleasure, and I apologize. I thought it was at 8 o'clock, not at 6, so there you have it.
Oh, you know what? Not to worry. Not to worry. You're here now. I just, did things in a little bit different order till you could get on the line, and it's all good.
Okay.
So tonight, listeners, we have our guest, Rhiann Eisler, and we're going to be discussing, among other things, her books, The Famous Chalice and the Blade, which I give much credit for putting me on this path. Her other books are Sacred Pleasure and the most recent, The Real Wealth of Nations. I'm sure we're going to be talking about our history from the partnership and domination perspective and how economic systems devalue the contribution of women. If there's time, we'll get into stereotypical feminine, and we're certainly going to talk about her activism in co-founding the Spiritual Alliance to Stop Intimate Violence and the Center for Partnership Studies Caring Economics Campaign and her online classes that she's giving at CIIS in San Francisco, so we have lots and lots to talk about. Rhianne, certainly I want to get to the 2009 Distinguished Peace Leadership Award you just received, and you addressed the United Nations. But for new listeners, can we begin at the beginning and just give listeners a sense of how you came to all this and what led you to that important work, Chalice and the Blade, and establishing the Center for Partnership Studies?
It was questions, Karen, that I think so many of us have asked about, does it have to be this way? I was born in Europe, in Vienna, at a time that in terms of my conceptual framework introduced, by my work and now used by many others, of the partnership and domination systems as two underlying ways of structuring society, it was a massive regression to the domination system. It was the rise to power of the Nazis. And from one day to the next, really, my whole world collapsed, and we escaped, really, just by a hair's breadth from being killed. And most of my family were killed in the Holocaust, most of my extended family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. And we just barely made it. In fact, we were on one of the last ships to Cuba before one that many people have heard about because a movie was made about it. It was called The Voyage of the Damned. It was the St. Louis, and it was a ship of 1,000 Jewish women, men, and children, like we had done earlier, fleeing to Cuba. They had fled too, fleeing the Nazis, and that ship was turned back. And it was turned back not only by the Cuban authorities, even though, like we, they had paid for, for landing permits, for visas, but by every nation in the Western Hemisphere, including the United States. So it was these kinds of experiences, having to flee Vienna, seeing that ship anchored, and, the anguish of my parents and others as it finally had to sail off and had to go back to Europe. Many of the people on it were killed, of course, as we would have if we just had been on that later ship, that led me to ask that question, does it have to be this way? And the conventional social categories really didn't answer the question of whether there's a better alternative, right-left, religious-secular, Eastern-Western, Northern-Southern. I mean, we've seen all the terrible things in so many of these societies. But I really didn't get to this research until another pivotal experience in my life, and that was when I became involved in the late 60s in the women's movement. And I suddenly realized that I had always felt like an outsider, and I thought, well, I'm a Jew, I'm a refugee. But then I realized I felt like an outsider also because as a woman, most of what I had been taught, in all these years of university that I had taken, was mostly by, about, and for, not people like me, women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was a wow. I mean, that I just threw myself into the women's movement. So when I embarked on my own research, really, it was with a systemic perspective. I was taking into account the status of women. And once you do that, you begin to see configurations, patterns that repeat themselves cross-culturally and historically, and that the status of women, as we found in a statistical study, as a matter of fact, called Women, Men, and the Global Quality of Life at the Center for Partnership Studies, it can be a better predictor of the general quality of life in terms of human rights, in terms of everything, standard of material living, etc., than GDP. So that, in a nutshell, a rather long and large nutshell.
Well, I mean, these were huge things that happened in your life. I mean, as rightly so, I think that's how our lives are shaped, by these pivotal moments and these aha moments. Are you still amazed today that how many people think, women are equal and women don't need feminism and everything's just fine?
Yeah, I'm not really amazed. I'm outraged, because if we had an educational system that really includes the history of the female half of humanity in a significant way, rather than just shunting it off to Women's History Month, you know, I mean, you know, students get it. It's not the main event, right? It's just something.
It's secondary. Or third or fourth.
Yeah, or somewhere there. Then everybody would know, number one, you know, what we've had to struggle against, how hard it has been to make the gains that we have, how in many world regions these gains, of course, have not been made. All you have to look at is Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, I mean, the Congo. I mean, you know, the situation of women worldwide, the human rights violations are horrendous, and yet that's not what the news is about, is it? That's not what the conversation is about.
Well, I remember when Jimmy Carter came out and said he was leaving the church because the Bible was, you know, sort of gave license to oppress women. It wasn't even on the evening news. You know, I mean, so many people didn't even know about it unless they caught it on the internet. And that really appalled me. I mean, here he is, a former president, too.
Yeah. Well, this has been a good deal of my work. And one of the avenues that I've taken, as you know, is the obvious one of saying, yeah, this is really terrible for the female half of humanity. Actually, the majority, we're a little bit more than half. But it's also awful for men and for children of both genders because of these connections that my work and the research of others is increasingly finding. So it's a conversation that is beginning to get a little bit more attention, but far, far too little. And every one of us has to change the conversation. That's really part of what it's about, isn't it? And
well,
my books are really resources.
Well, most definitely. But I have to ask you, and I was about to say, can you speculate? But maybe you can do more than speculate, because maybe you have statistics. Why is it like that? I mean, obviously, some people are benefiting from, you know, keeping women oppressed. But why do you think women themselves haven't risen up and just said, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore? I mean, especially in the West, where, you know, their lives aren't threatened, you know. What is it about? Is it simply a matter of the religious programming?
Well, it's more, I mean, certainly religious programming has had a huge and, in that sense, extremely negative effect. But it's the culture, isn't it? We've all been socialized, women and men, to just accept that. I mean, when I was growing up, people still used to say, hope next time it's a boy when a baby was born.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is in the West. This was in California. Okay?
Yeah.
So today, you know, that's no longer acceptable here. But, you know, it's very much still the case. I mean, one of my dearest friends, she died from the torture and the misery, you know, and the effects of that. For, you know, that she suffered in Pakistan for being an outspoken feminist. I mean, if a baby is born female, the women wail. They wail, but they wail for a reason, because, you know, they can have their noses cut off by their husbands and nobody says anything, because they haven't born a baby boy, or they can just be thrown out.
Right, and, I was about to say, or they can just be killed at birth.
Yeah. Oh, the baby can be killed at birth,
right,
but the woman herself. So they have learned to internalize this devaluation of the female and anything stereotypically associated with the female in a very brutal way. But we, in more subtle ways, still have the teaching of that devaluation. I mean, I wrote a book called Tomorrow's Children on an education that would be more gender balanced. Because even in the West, and we've certainly moved much, much more ahead than much of the Well, I mean, you know, we talk about the developing world and the developed world, not that we're all that developed, but in that sense, we have been more developed. I mean, it's no longer okay, you know, to burn witches here, whereas it's still, you know, quote unquote, but it's still okay to stone a woman in a big stadium, you know, for
right,
any accused
right.
Sexual...
Well, I mean, look at Uganda. They're talking about passing a law to be able to kill homosexuals. That really kind of shakes me up a little bit, I have to tell you, even though it's Africa, that, you know, somebody could be killed just for their sexual orientation. I mean, it's pretty scary.
Well, when you say even though it's Africa, this has been one of the real problems with the politically correct discussion. I think that we've got to stop being so politically correct, frankly. Just because somebody is dark-skinned or lives in Africa doesn't mean that we should say, oh, it's okay for them to have terrible human rights violations. It is not.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
And that's not
right.
Cultural imperialism, I'm sorry. That is simply standing up for those who are silenced by oppression and by customs that are brutal, by traditions of domination. And I have a lot of problems with that, with the people, you know, the so-called left, where, you know, anything that's done here, it's okay to criticize it, but it's not okay to criticize anything in the Middle East, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America. Well, we have to. I mean, look at sexual mutilation. A good friend of mine, Fran Hosken, she wrote the Hosken Report on the sexual mutilation of girls and women in Africa. Oh, my gosh. The flack she got, the attacks she got, all the population organizations were afraid to even mention her name. Well,
and
today,
why is that, Rianne? Is
but wait a minute. But today, it's the African women and men themselves who are working to eradicate this horrible form of torture. So it's really okay for us to speak up about human rights from the outside, because from the inside, it's sometimes much harder.
So you said, like, you know, sometimes you're mad at the left because they try to be too politically correct. Do you think they try to be politically correct because they're afraid of being called an elitist or a racist or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that that's a part of the problem. It's sort of a double standard.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that it's okay to criticize our policies. And, yeah, I think it is okay to criticize our policies and our customs and, you know, some of the stuff that we do in the West, but somehow that means that it's not okay to criticize people in the poorer regions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I can recall having a conversation with someone on an email list, and I was talking about how, you know, how dare they have these witch hunts today, and it was almost as if, you know, you shouldn't say anything bad about them over there. And
I mean,
and
these poor children that are being flayed alive. I mean, oh my God, by their own parents. I mean, the things that are done. Why shouldn't it be okay? It's our duty, for goodness sakes, to say something.
Well, you know, you talked about in Chalice and the Blade, toward the end of the book, you gave hope. You talked about, you know, a paradigm shift. Do you think that's, you know, on the horizon? I mean, are we working toward that 100th monkey? I mean, do you feel more hopeful than you did when you were writing the book?
Look, I'm a pragmatic person. I am a visionary, but I'm a pragmatic visionary. I don't feel more hopeful than when I wrote the book because I've seen a period of regression worldwide. I've seen the rise of fundamentalism, which is really not, I mean, yeah, it you can find religious teachings certainly to support oppression and domination and, you know, doing horrible things to women and to children and to, quote, enemies and outgroups. But it's not about religion. It's about reimposing a more rigid domination system, you know,
mm-hmm.
authoritarianism, theocratic rule from the top in the state or tribe, you know, a domination family, rigidly male-dominated, kids, very punitive family. Kids learn it's very dangerous to question orders, no matter how brutal or unjust. And yeah, really, violence as a means of imposing control, whether it's within the family or in the family of nations or within a tribe or within a state. It's the domination system that is dominator fundamentalism.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not more optimistic. On the other hand, I'm realistic, and I know that the upward movement that we've seen since the European Middle Ages, which, you know, really looked a lot like the Taliban, if you think about it, you
mm-hmm.
know,
yeah.
the Inquisition, the Crusades, the witch hunts, you know, women had no rights, children had no rights, women and the feminine were so despised. I mean, that theologians seriously argued about whether a woman has an immortal soul.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't been a linear upward movement. It's been an upward spiral with dips. So I know there are dips, and but I also know that the domination system, the mix of high technology and a domination system, could take us to an evolutionary dead end. So we really have to accelerate this movement, and we have to get out of the dips.
Well, I know you've provided us with a lot of tools to sort of help point the way, but let me ask the question like this. What do you recommend we all do? You know, those of us that are sitting home just disgusted with the news and, you know, disgusted that, you know, we haven't made bigger strides. You know, what are you doing? What can those of us who don't have your sort of influence, what can the average person do?
Well, first of all of us can do something. None of us can do everything, but every one of us can do something. We all have some sphere of influence. So I would say that one of the ways that people can really make a difference is to simply change the conversation. We're doing that right now in this radio program, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, we're talking about issues that are not really discussed, even in the so-called progressive blogosphere.
Wow, that's true.
Contrary,
when you think of it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on the contrary, I mean, you know, we can change the conversation. I mean, so that's something that everybody can do, and my books and my articles are certainly resources for that. But let's say that you belong to a PTA. You can start talking about what can we do here for children to really ensure that there's parenting education, that the caring work, the caregiving work that is so devalued still in our public policy, you know, because there's always money, isn't there, for prisons, you know.
Or the
punitive
Pentagon.
Yeah, punitive male head of household or the hero as warrior, right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These dominator male stereotypes, which are not about men, it's about dominator masculinity, which equates masculinity with, you know, control, with conquest, with, you know, violence. I mean, real men are macho. They're, you know, they're violent, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we can talk about that, but we can also take some action. I mean, we can see that there is, from the funding that is available, and there is money. I mean, this notion that we're out of money. There's so many ways of really raising money. I mean, I've proposed in my book, The Real Wealth of Nations, something that other people have proposed, a tax on short-term speculation in the stock market. That would
bring in a huge
amount of money.
Yeah, and it might help our current economic situation, too.
Yeah, it would help us not have the kind of miserable meltdowns that have been part of the dominator economics. So, I mean, I always like to start with the primary human relations, gender, parent, child, because those are the ones where people first learn what's normal or abnormal, what's possible or impossible, what's moral or immoral. And so, for example, one of the things that we are working on at the Center for Partnership Studies is a very wonderful, very simple, short, accessible, a caring and connected parenting guide. And we're hoping to really distribute that both on our website, through other groups. So if some of your listeners know of a hospital that would like to use them, of schools that would like to use them, websites that once we finish the project want to post them, that would be great.
Okay.
So we're providing resources. We also, of course, have our materials that we just had a pilot project on, which is the Real Wealth Community Presenters Program, which is to change the conversation about economics and start talking about caring policies, caring economics, rather than capitalism or socialism.
So how would that work, Rianne? Is that something that works alongside capitalism, or does it temper capitalism, or how does that look in the world?
Well, look, the issue really isn't capitalism versus socialism. I mean, we need a mix of market and of government planning. The issue is what kinds of policies and practices do we support? What do we measure as economically productive? I mean, we're working at the Center for Partnership Studies now with the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., to really look at how can we accelerate the movement towards alternative measures of economic health, measures that take into account the quality of life. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
Health,
yeah.
Child care. I mean, we're so behind Western Europe. And it's so funny because, you know, people, you'll see some of these people screaming, well, we don't want to be like Western Europe. And the question is, why not?
Well, I hear that too. And I, you know, and having traveled to Western Europe and have friends there, I think to myself, these people obviously don't even know what they're talking about. You know, they're talking against their own interests, really. And it's the Fox News set, I think.
Well, it's a big set, isn't it?
Well,
and they
yeah.
have a lot of funding, and so it's up to us to raise our voices and to say this is nonsense.
Well, and I think
and the Real Wealth of Nations has some of the data. I mean, you can use the Nordic nations, you know, Sweden, Finland, Norway, which, you know, they say, oh, they're socialist. Well, actually, they're not. They're a mix of market and central planning, but they have fabulous caring policies. But you know what else they have other than, you know, those caring policies, and it's completely related with it. They have 40% of their national legislatures are women.
Makes a difference.
Status of women rises. Men are more likely to also support caring for children, the so-called women's work. So they have generous paid parental leave. They have very good child care. They have stipends to help families take care of children. They have parenting classes. I mean, the list goes on.
We
and you know what?
You
they're
the
very
Maddow
economically
show.
What?
We have to get you on the Rachel Maddow show.
I'd love to be on her show. But they're very economically successful. I mean, they always rank very high, not only in the United Nations Human Development Reports, but in the World Economic Forum's Global Competitiveness Reports. And that's the kind of data in the Real Wealth of Nations in my book. So that book's really a tool.
Well, you know what really sort of sticks in my craw sometimes is the fact that, you know, it used to be, or at least I seem to remember it growing up as a child in New Orleans, you know, we were always asked, you know, to give money for the poor, and, you know, the poor seemed to be, you know, or people in need, you know, that always seemed to be part of what the church did. You know, they sort of looked out for people. They sort of set the moral tone, you know. And unless I'm just looking in the wrong places these days, it doesn't seem like the church does that anymore, you know, where they could be talking about some of these issues, you know, and helping uplift humanity instead of, you know, a lot of the divisiveness that they actually create. And I don't know, it's just such a disappointment, I think, you know, when they have a pulpit there, you know, they could be using it for so much more good. And I just get very frustrated, you know, because it seems like, in fact, sometimes it's the contrary. You know, you see the Pope going to Africa and talking against the use of condoms, you know.
Yeah, when everybody's dying of AIDS because of it. Well, I think it's immoral, and in my book, Sacred Pleasure, I wrote that I think it was immoral of the Pope to do that. I mean, it certainly was inhuman. when people are dying of AIDS. You know, the churches, I mean, many churches are still, so to speak, bringing baskets to the poor. The issue, however, is not only bringing baskets to the poor, but changing the conditions that make for poverty.
Right.
And if you don't really look at the facts, which is that the mass of the world's poor and the poorest of the poor are women and children. That in the United States, women over the age of 65 are twice as likely to be poor as men over 65. Then you also don't address one of the underlying issues, which I do address in my work, which is that it isn't just wage discrimination. It's that most of these women, you know, who are poor in the United States, over, you know, the elderly women, most of them are or were caregivers, and we don't reward that work. In Norway, the first 7 years of caring for a child, you can contribute towards Social Security credit. I mean, it isn't that there aren't ways of doing this. You
right.
know?
It just needs, things just need to have, we have to rethink how we do things, and we have to look at what we really value and put our money where our mouth is.
Absolutely. But you see, I mean, the church leaders, and by church I don't mean only Judeo-Christian, but also Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, they have not made a major issue of violence against women and children. That's why I co-founded the Spiritual Alliance to Stop Intimate Violence, to try to get them to take a strong stand. I mean, this could make such a huge difference in the world, because these people have enormous influence, don't they?
Well, and that website for listeners is www.saiv.net, saiv.net, Spiritual
yes.
Alliance to Stop Intimate Violence.
Yeah, please do go, and also go on our CPS website, which is partnershipway.org, and you'll find information about our Caring Economics campaign. And I really invite everybody to be part of it, to contribute financially if you can, if you haven't made your year-end donations or still want to make one. You can do it online at the Center for Partnership Studies website. We need people who really want to work to change the conditions. Because otherwise, we're always trying to put our finger in the dike, aren't we?
Yes, we never get ahead. It's always crisis management.
Yeah.
Well, Rhianne, let's switch gears a little bit here, because I want to talk about you addressing the UN and your the Peace Leadership Award you received. Tell us what the Peace Leadership Award is, and what you did to deserve it. I think you know there have been a lot of notable people who've received that, haven't there?
Well, yeah, the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu. I mean, I was very honored to get it. Well, I think, I mean, you'll have to ask them why they gave it to me, but
so it wasn't
my work
one particular thing.
Work really is about building cultures of peace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, in domination systems, peace can only be an interval between wars. That's all it can be. I mean, they're inherently warlike. They're inherently, I mean, if you have rigid rankings of domination, whether it's in families or in tribes or nations or internationally or intertribally, violence is always there, isn't it? I mean, as
yeah.
the instrument to impose that. So you've got to, I mean, and by the way, I really want to say that I believe in defensive violence. I mean, I'm a Holocaust survivor. And I'm very realistic that sometimes you have to use violence, and you know, those are the realities of life.
Right.
I mean, Hitler, people negotiated with Hitler, but it didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kept saying, you know, like Ajmal-Adin, you know, in Iran, keeps saying, oh no, we want peace, but and you know, and they'll make treaties and what have you. But these people are so into domination systems that it doesn't mean anything. Okay?
Yeah, it's unlikely that they'll really ever change.
Well, they may have to. They themselves won't change, but people in their countries, I mean, look, in Iran right now, there's a strong student movement to try to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what will happen there. I hope that they can get, I mean, you know, I mean, there are people, I'm always so happy when my books get translated into, for example, some of my books have been translated into Urdu for youth in Pakistan. And I think that that's so important. I mean, people in all these regions want to shift from domination to partnership, and we need to support them and we need to provide for them. We also have a lot of work to do here, but you asked me why did I get it. I think it's because of this work, because of my writing, because of my activism, because of my speaking.
Well, you have an incredible body of work amassed, and I just want to repeat some of the titles of your books. You have The Chalice and the Blade, you have Sacred Pleasure, you have Real Wealth of Nations, you have The Partnership Way. I mean, and those are just the books. Then you have the Center for Partnership Studies and now the Spiritual Alliance to Stop Intimate Violence. I mean, you've been a busy lady. When do you sleep?
Well, sometimes I sleep at night. You didn't mention two books which I would like to mention.
Sure.
One I did mention is the Tomorrow's Children, which is my book on education, which is inspiring theses, I'm just dissertations, but it's also inspiring people to use it in school programs. Montessori schools are finding that it's a good update and a good expansion of Maria Montessori's work. And then there's another book, which was my attempt to sort of write a self-help book called The Power of Partnership. And I think that that book has been very, very useful to people. Really, it looks at our relationships, how we relate to ourselves, then our intimate relations, then our work and community relations. But then it shows how these are all of one piece and very different to the degree that we orient to the domination or partnership side of the continuum in our national relations, our international relations, our relations with Mother Earth, and our spiritual relations. Because as you know, I've written a lot about the difference between partnership spirituality and what passes for domination spirituality, for spirituality and domination systems, I should say.
Well, and that book is sort of like a workbook, too. So it's not just a straight read. Doesn't it sort of help you set up scenarios to practice what partnership actually is?
Absolutely. So I that's why I wanted to mention it, because for some people, that's really a good way to get into this.
Okay. Well, going back to the Peace Award, forgive me, you know, I always have to get political with you. I love to get political with you. But how do you, I guess it's a two-pronged question. It's about our president, who I supported and went out and campaigned for and everything like that. And I'm personally, I'll admit it, I'm fallen into that group of the, you know, the disappointed. What do you think about him getting the Peace Award, and how are you feeling about him right now? Are you disappointed? Or are you still giving him more time?
I'm giving him more time. For one thing, I mean, I think you might be going towards Afghanistan. And I don't think he had much of a choice. If he pulled us out of Afghanistan, and within the next month or so, there's another terrorist attack on U.S. soil, I mean, he'd be lynched.
Yeah, I could just hear Dick Cheney. I told you so. I told you so.
Well, I mean, you know, he'd be impeached. I mean, he didn't have any choice, and he was right. I mean, that was the war that we had to, you know. I mean, well, anyway, Iraq. I mean, was a disastrous thing to do, but you know, there's no point in revisiting that. I think that this is a man who is trying to balance his ideals, and he has ideals, with realities, and it's not an easy act. And I feel sad for him right now because he's getting so much flack from everybody.
Well, and also, too, I mean, you know, in my moments when I'm feeling more charitable toward him, you know, I keep reminding myself of the, you know, the plate he inherited, which, you know, people so easily dismiss. And, you know, things might have been much different if we weren't in the bad state we were in when he took over office.
Well, you're so right. I mean, this notion of, like, with the economy, well, it's been a year. My gosh, I mean, the disaster that he inherited economically, and it really wasn't only the very, very poor Bush policies. It was really much more complicated than that, because you have basically an example of the domination elements in our economic systems taking us into a completely unsustainable situation. I mean, what would you expect?
Right. I mean, because we've heard the analogy before, you know, the country's like this huge ship and it can't turn very easily. It takes, you know, it's very difficult for it to turn and shift directions.
Well, and then there's China. I mean, it isn't just this country changing direction. I mean, look at what's happening in Copenhagen.
Well, what have you heard?
They're having a lot of trouble with many things. I just wrote an op-ed, by the way, which I think I should really put on our website as well. I called it a hidden truth about climate change, which is that if, and I hope it's a when, not an if, when money is committed to the poorer nations, that really we have to be careful that a substantial proportion of it goes to organizations on the ground, especially women's organizations,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it'll just disappear into thin air. But even beyond that, the facts, because you know me with the facts, the disaster, the proportion, especially in Southeast Asia, where some of the studies have been done, but it's universal, women apparently are 14% more likely to die in natural disasters than men. And in Bangladesh, during a flash flood, 90% of the fatalities were women. And again, we're back to cultural issues, because not only aren't girls taught to swim, you know, they're not supposed to be independent, but this is a culture where women aren't supposed to leave the house without a male relative with them.
So the water's rising and they stayed inside.
That's right.
Oh, that's hard to even fathom.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is. It really is, Rianne. Well, let's before we run out of time, and we still have some time left, tell us, what was it like to address the United Nations? And I want to make sure I say, too, actually, listeners can go to your website, RianneEisler.com, and read your acceptance speech for that peace award and the address you made to the United Nations. That's at www.RianneEisler.com. But tell us firsthand, Rianne, what was that like?
Well, first of all, I really want to clarify. I did not address the General Assembly.
Okay.
But it was wonderful to be at the United Nations and to give an address. It was a meeting in preparation for Copenhagen. And that's when I also boned up on these statistics that I just gave you.
Okay.
About what are some of the ignored, some of the hidden issues. It was great. I loved it.
So you sort of gave them some pointers on, some of the things to be looking out for.
I did, but I also made the point that returning to the old normal is not an option, that we
mm-hmm.
need to work for a new normal, and that really means a major long-term cultural shift from domination to partnership. You can't really tack on all these things to a fundamentally distorted system.
Yeah.
And one of the major distorting things that we've inherited is this subordination of women and the devaluation of anything stereotypically considered feminine, such as caring, caregiving, keeping a clean home environment, environmental housekeeping. I mean,
because otherwise we're just treating the symptoms rather than the disease.
Precisely, and there will be other symptoms. I mean, so that was really my main point.
Okay.
And that is something that, as you know, is my main point. I think that there are some short-term things we need to do, that we can do, some immediate policy changes. But we're really talking, well, as Einstein said, you can't solve problems with the same thinking that created them.
How true. Rianne, I think we have a caller. Let me see if I can get them on the line. Sometimes they're here just listening, and sometimes they actually have a question. So let me check. Just one second. Hello, you're calling from the 310 area code. Did you have a question for Rianne?
I do, Ken. This is Lucy Madeline.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me? I'm driving and I can't pull over.
Okay, well, we can hear you. Don't get in an accident, please.
Okay, I will. I have Bluetooth and I have a friend in the car, so.
Okay, well, you're on with Rhianne. What's your question?
Rhianne, I wanted to thank you. I read your book when I was 17. I read Chalice and the Blade, and it completely changed my consciousness and absolutely altered the trajectory of my entire life. And I remember when I was reading it, I was in art school in Canada, and there were no other girls my age who were having these kinds of conversations or thinking these kinds of thoughts. And I wanted to know, you know, I know that in partnership studies you do work with young people, but what do you think about the young girls right now? Do you think that this information is getting to them, or do you think that it's getting worse? I'm 23 now, but as I said, I was 17 when I started to read your books and kind of have these kinds of ideas. And I've definitely felt isolated in my generation. And I just wanted to know if you thought of that at all, or if you had anything to say about that.
Well, I think that, well, first of all, I'm so glad. It always is so heartening. And if you want to write an email to that effect, sometimes it's very nice to have these statements which so many people make to me on our website, because that will encourage and empower others. The point that you raise is so important, because we really need to reach a generation that is not being taught, first of all, about the struggle to just get what we've got in the West. You know, they somehow think, oh, we're fine, we're equal. Well, that's, you know, which is nonsense. One of the things that we are doing is we just had our first Real Wealth Community Presenters program, a training, and there will, I hope, be material. So I encourage you to write us to inquire about that. It's modeled on the Al Gore program, where you commit to making 10 presentations using the materials during the year. It's up to us reaching these young people. The other thing is, I am teaching online through the California Institute of Integral Studies. It's CIIS, and you can find out information about that on my website or the center website as well. It's an online class in transformative leadership. So I would really like to invite you to be a transformative leader. And
I will certainly take that.
Good.
Go ahead. Good.
Well, drive carefully.
Thank you for calling in, Lucy.
Oh, my gosh. No, I just wanted to thank you again, and thank you, Karen, for this show. And really, this work has absolutely changed my life. I will definitely check that out and get a part of the program. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good night, Lucy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I have to say, that's the first time I've actually spoken to Lucy, but she was one of the women that inspired me to do the Four Mothers in Way show or series. She said, "Where are our foremothers? Let us hear their voices." And so that's why I sort of got everybody together in this, you know, concentrated small period of time, so we could, hear voices like yours, Rhianne, and to see, you know, well, you know, what's the next phase? What should we be doing next?
Well, we have a lot to do, and we have to inform, inspire, and act.
Inform, inspire, and act. That says it all, doesn't it? It's not an easy feat, but certainly worthwhile.
Well, it's also a very fulfilling way of living.
Well, it certainly is true. It's the idea of, you know, how you feel when you give. You certainly do feel different when you're in service and when you're giving than, you know, when it's the opposite. Someone actually just emailed me a question. They say, what would you tell women and men so invested in the message of Sarah Palin as a leader for the future?
Oh, my. Well, if they're so invested in Sarah Palin as a leader for the future, there may not be much that will sway them, because they're obviously very, very brainwashed, I'm afraid. I feel bad because, you know, I mean, she's a spunky woman, and I think that's a nice role model, but she's so incredibly ignorant and so incredibly prejudiced and short-sighted. I would encourage them to find another role model.
Well,
or to explore. I mean, you know, some people are just so hermetically sealed, it's very hard to get through to them. The only thing is to sort of say, well, what do you really think what kind of future do you think she can really offer you? And here are some better alternatives. That's what I would say.
Well, it all always boils down to education, doesn't it?
Yeah, but depends on what kind of education.
Well, yes, of course. I was naturally assuming, you know, informed and accurate and not, you know. Well, Rianne, we're getting to the end of our time here, and you've covered a lot. But what would be one of the most important ideas you think you'd like to leave listeners with? Or is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to be sure to mention?
Well, I just want to say that I hope that we can change the conversation and get out of the old thinking about right-left, religious-secular, east-west, north-south, and really change the way we think about society to think of them in terms of do they orient to the domination side or to the partnership side. And I can't go into the whole configuration. We've already touched on it, of course, when I was talking about fundamentalism. But the Nordic nations really have moved more to the partnership side, and that's why they have more caring policies and why they're so successful. They have more democracy in both the family and the state. They have a much more equal partnership between the female and male halves of humanity, and therefore also much more value given to the stereotypically feminine, like caring, caregiving, nonviolence. And yeah, they have been in the forefront of trying to leave behind traditions of violence, be it so-called corporal punishment of children in families, which, of course, is an example of using force to impose your will on others. We've all been taught that that's moral and good, but it really is a dominator tradition. To a men's movement, they're trying to disentangle masculinity from its dominator association with violence domination, to the first peace studies. That's a configuration, and that's the configuration we need to move toward worldwide.
Well, and it's nice that, you know, they could very easily be a role model. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. And, of course, people will say, well, they're so homogeneous. And I will say, well, yeah, so's Yemen. And so, I mean, you know, that doesn't mean a thing.
Right.
Do you orient to the domination system or the partnership side? I mean, it's a longer conversation, and people very often have conversations when they read my books. You know, they sort of write in the margins. And I encourage people to do that and to use these books. Use them not only for yourself, you know, like Lucy said, as a way to really empower yourself and to make positive changes in your own life, but to help change the social conditions, the family conditions, the religious beliefs, the economic system. And that's the job, and it's a wonderful thing that we all need to be engaged in.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, you can actually look at all of this that Rianne and I have been talking about tonight at several different websites. Let me give those to you again. One is RianneEisler.com. The other is SAIV.net. That's the Spiritual Alliance to Stop Intimate Violence. And there's also the Center for Partnership Studies website. And I'm looking for
that's
that.
PartnershipWay.org. PartnershipWay is one word.
Okay.
.org. And Rianne Eisler has two E's in the middle.
Okay. And people can find out about getting your books there. And can they purchase them from you there? And you sign them?
They can
them
purchase the books through the Center for Partnership Studies. And if they want it signed, sure. Just ask, you know, when you purchase it, ask for a signature, and I'll try to oblige.
And those online classes in San Francisco, well, you said they're online, so...
They're online, yeah.
Okay.
There's a, the next one starts in January, so if you want to register, just go find out. There will be an intensive in Pacifica. It's a beautiful resort, as you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But it's not mandatory, the intensive. It's nice to come to it, though, and meet people.
And how long do the classes last?
It's a semester.
A semester.
And, oh, I mean, the people are fabulous. They form this incredible community and the work that they produce. I mean, one of the students works for the City and County of San Francisco. She did a partnership audit of the policies and practices of the City and County of San Francisco. Others who are ministers. I mean, a lot of these people are midlife.
So there's no college prerequisite or anything like that?
Well, if you just want to take the class, probably not. If you want to enroll in the master's or PhD program, you know, and the class counts towards that, then there is a prerequisite.
And I would imagine class cost and everything like that is on the website.
Absolutely. You can find that out. But they should really, if somebody's interested, please hurry. Because we're going to start the class in January and registration will close, I think, in a few days, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, Rhianne, thank you so very much for being a guest again on the show and participating in the Four Mothers series. I couldn't have imagined doing this without you. You definitely had to be one of the people during this short series. And we're building an incredible archive here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and it is my honor to speak to folks like you every week. And, because... you're our mentors, and you're certainly mine. And I thank you so very much for everything you do in the world to try to make it a better place.
Well, thank you, my dear, and I'm so glad that you are continuing. I mean, as you know, Chalice and Sacred Pleasure deal so much with the importance of the sacred feminine, with the importance of women being part of the priesthood, with the essential work of partnership rather than dominator spirituality. It's very, very important, so thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Rhianne, and I'll say good night, and I look forward to a conversation down the road.
Me too.
All right, good night.
Good night.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, a hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be a deity, an archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and ideas and benchmarks just might save the world, the very things I was just speaking to Rhianne Eisler about tonight. Well, listeners, I'm going to go ahead and take a one-minute break here, and when I come back, I'm going to finish our What's the Buzz segment that we started as we were waiting for Rhianne to get connected on the line. So I think I'm going to leave you listening for 1 minute to Jenna Green, and her musical offering is called The Bard Song, and here it is.
We honor now the Celtic bard, we offer up our praise. Guardians of our mysteries, keepers of the old ways.
Well, Listeners, thank you for staying with me tonight. And the next item I have on What's the Buzz, it's actually a fun little topic, and I want to thank Selena Fox for this. It's sort of a, you know, a holiday What's the Buzz item, and it's about the female Santa from a Norse deity, and oftentimes her name was Holda. H-O-L-D-A. And Selena Fox makes sure we know that in pagan religions, goddesses are an important part of our celebrations because they help tie us to ancient traditions and the seasons of the year. And Holda, Selena says, is one of her favorites. And her stories are found in old folk tales in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Holland, Denmark, Norway. You know, that part of the world that Rhiann was just saying is so much more progressive and, you know, has it together a little bit better than we do. Anyway, Holda, her name means kind and merciful, and she was one of Selena's discoveries when she was researching the pagan origins of Santa Claus. And let's see, she says that to learn more about Holda, she's connected to winter solstice celebrations. And she says it was Holda, not Santa, who brought gifts to children and determined who was naughty or nice. She also encountered lore depicting her as dressed in red and going down chimneys to bring gifts to children. Sounds pretty familiar, huh? An old Germanic tradition also included leaving an offering of food and milk for Holda on December 24th, known as, okay, now get this, Mother Night. As with many ancient goddesses, Holda is complex. She's called Holdi and Frau Hol. She goes by a variety of names and takes different forms depending on the locale and culture. In her form as a beneficent and noble white lady, Holda is beautiful and stately with long flowing golden hair, which shines with sunlight as she combs it. She wears a white gown covered with a magical white goose down cape, and at Yuletide she travels the world in a carriage and bestows good health, good fortune, and other gifts, sometimes gold coins, to humans that honor her. She's not only connected with the winter solstice itself, but also with the holiday seasons that continue many of its customs, like the 12 days of Christmas from December 25th through January 6th. You can find out more about Holda either by going to Circle Sanctuary's website or BeliefNet.com. And if you just put in Riding with Holda, you'll get more information about her. She's also considered a weather goddess. Snow flies as Holda shakes her cape or the comforter on her bed. It's said that fog comes from her fires and rain from her washing day. She was also a sky goddess riding the wind, and sometimes she's seen riding across the sky with Odin. So anyway, look up Holda, H-O-L-D-A. That's the Norse female Santa. And one of the final things I'd like to share with you is an article that was in USA Today. It talks about more U.S. Christians mix Eastern and New Age beliefs, and I'm just going to pick out some snippets from the article. But it talks about devotion to one clear faith is fading. That of the 72% of Americans who attend religious services at least once a year, 35% say they attend in multiple places, they hopscotch across denominations. That the Pew Research says all of their findings point toward spiritual and religious openness, which is actually, I think, a good thing. People are mixing and matching, and it's actually cause for concern among a lot of conservative Christians, because it disturbs them to find so many people who roam from church to church or who believe in multiple lives, you know, reincarnation. They also are upset that a lot of these people believe spiritual energy or astrology, or they think yoga is a spiritual practice. They consider this confusion. But I like one of the quotes here from one of the people that was interviewed for the survey. She said, "My mother feared for years that I was no longer saved, but just 2 days before she died, she had an epiphany. She said she was told in a spiritual experience to put aside all religious and political differences and just love one another. That was her blessing to me, and that's what I'm doing." So anyway, it was a nice article, you know, with a positive, upbeat note, and I think it really speaks to the fact that there is no one way. Okay, well, if you're wondering why I consistently continue to have this segment in each show, well, it's because of the divisiveness and the programming out there has been pervasive. We really want to try to counter the fear mongers and the intolerance that seems to be out there, you know, with all the divisive dogma. And, you know, it's important, like Rhianne Eisler was saying, we have to change the conversation. We have to constantly educate, whether we're educating about women's issues or religious issues or just plain human issues, because there's so much disinformation out there and intentional deflection. There's so much that we really have to do to make the world a better place, and we have to inoculate ourselves against ignorance, intolerance, and all those insidious isms. So with that being said, the bees are released from my bonnet for yet another week. And speaking of our Four Mothers and Wayshowers series, we're in full force, and I thank you for your continued interest. You can, I can see that you're out there listening because the host can actually see how many people are tuning in, so I thank you for your listener loyalty. And don't forget, as I mentioned earlier, the series was inspired by you and one of those folks that actually called in tonight, Lucy. And Lucy, if you're still listening, thank you very much for, you know, the gas you've put in my tank. And you see, you put gas in Rhianne Eisler's tank tonight, too. It was folks like Lucy who asked, where is Rhianne Eisler, Carol Chris, Barbara Walker, Genevieve Vaughn, Cheryl Spretnak, Isaac Bonowitz, Pat Monahan, all the people that have been on the Four Mothers and Wayshowers series. And to keep you updated, some of the most recent folks we've just booked, in case you haven't heard, I believe next week we're probably going to have Patrick McCullum. He's fresh off the Parliament of World Religions in Australia. He's going to be talking about that. Also, Rezit Erginer from Turkey is going to be calling us, and he's awesome. He believes, you know, will speak to matriarchies and goddess religions. He's a scholar in Turkey. Heidi Gottner Abendroth, who edited the new book Societies of Peace, Matriarchies, Past, Present, and Future. We're going to be talking about that book with her. Rezit and Heidi from across the pond, as is another guest we'll have on the show, another gentleman, Michael York. He just presented at the Academy of World Religions, and his topic will be Men Who Love the Goddess. Now, if you're new to Voices of the Sacred Feminine here on Blog Talk, you probably figured out tonight we can take your calls. We will also be glad to take your email questions. So please take a look at who's coming up and let me hear from you. And I'm happy to have you on the show or ask the questions for you. And if you can't listen live or you don't want to be on the air, you can always email me some of your questions in advance. But whatever you do, keep tuning in each Wednesday at 6 Pacific, and don't miss us. And if you can't catch us at 6 on Wednesday, you can catch us from the archives. You can also join Blog Talk as a listener for free and have reminders sent to your email box of our shows so you won't forget about our awesome guests each week. And please, if you're a fan of the show, please indicate that by selecting us as a favor on Blog Talk Radio. And I can see some folks actually did that tonight, so thank you very much. Well, I want to remind listeners that I'm going to be teaching a class series in Orange County, that's in Southern California, starting in January. It's called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, and it's 11-session class. It's going to be two classes every month, and this is a class that was actually put together by the Unitarian Universalist Women in Religion program, and it's using the teaching and wisdom of some of the best minds of our foremothers and wayshowers. We're going to explore women's power, past, present, and future, in the context of our religious history, including domination and subordination, which we touched on tonight with Rhianne and her work, suppression of the female presence in Judaism and Christianity, women's access to power or power in general, how patriarchal religious philosophy has affected relationships among women, men, families, and societies. This is really important stuff. It's foundational to understand goddess spirituality and feminist theology, quite frankly, because understanding the historical roots of these phenomena, you empower yourself, you improve your personal life and the lives of women, men, and families everywhere. If you want more information about that, please contact me at KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. I also invite you to visit the media page of my website and catch the radio interviews I'm invited to do there. This week I'm going to be doing another interview at a station in South Africa talking about the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. You can go to my events page, see if I'll be appearing in a town near you. And if you're interested in my coming to visit, please let me know. I'm willing to go beyond Los Angeles with a sponsor. Check out the articles and links on my pages there on the website. And I'm also the Los Angeles Women's and Goddess Spirituality writer. You can find those articles from a link on the home page of my website. And right now we have some articles on the real origins of Christmas in this holiday season. You can take advantage of an offer I have for radio listeners. Go to my website and go to the Goddess Store page. And both of my books can be gotten for $25 plus shipping and handling. That would be Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, which has garnered some prestigious endorsements, I'm happy to say. And the second one, Walking an Ancient Path, which was a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards. And the scholar David Hillman has remarked that the book Walking an Ancient Path is an immensely pleasurable and enlightening journey that stands boldly against the patriarchal denigration of the divine feminine. And quite frankly, that's what my work in the world has been about, including this radio show. So in closing, I'd like to leave you with the guest lineup for the rest of December. Next week will be Eleanor Gadden and Patrick McCullum, followed by Isaac Bonowitz the following week, which will be the last Wednesday of the year. And let's see, tonight I'm going to share this evening prayer with you, and it comes from the Goddess Temple in Orange County. And it goes like this: Great Queen, Mother, and She of the Throne, in this, the dark of the year, divine magic remains the sacred spark within me. Each day I remember, and I use it well. Thank you, Creatrix of Life, Creatrix of Life. Blessed be. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath. Just sort of focus on those words, Great Queen, Mother, and She of the Throne. In this, the dark of the year, divine magic remains the sacred spark within me. Each day I remember and I use it well. Thank you, Creatrix of Life. Well, I would like to say goodnight for another week. And as I do so, I am going to leave you with some beautiful music to close out the show. And I think I'm going to go back to Lane Redman and let you hear a song called Final Delphic Oracle. So good night, listeners, and thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll be back with me next Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific. And what you're listening to again is Lane Redman and the Final Delphic Oracle. Good night and happy holidays.
thyself. Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you. Choose not the advice of others. Make your own nature your guide in life. The king. The well-crafted temple has fallen to pieces. Apollo dwells here no more. There is no more oracular laurel. No talking spring. And the voice of the water has been silenced. All is finished. But here are my words. The muse cannot be silenced. She sings within us forever. Her voice will be heard again.
above all things speak the truth. Know thyself. Know thyself.